So far we have studied three paths, the path of karma or service, bhakti or love, and jnana or knowledge. Now people ask, which path should I choose or which is suitable to me? A lot of times it depends on a person's nature. Say if I'm an active person, I'm an extrovert, I like to work. And then such a person, you sit him down in a class, you know, like this, he'll fall asleep. Why? Because he's not used to listening. He wants to roll up his sleeves and work. So you say, okay, you take the path of service. You know, go out and serve the world, feed the homeless, build, you know, a house habitat for humanity. So such people who are action-oriented, they take the path of service. And then there are others who are very emotional. They start crying when they think of the Lord, how beautiful he is, how much he loves us. And so they have a path of love. And so they want to love God. And so through love and through service, the mind becomes purified. The mind is reduced of the selfishness, the vastness. And such a pure mind is then ready for knowledge. So knowledge is considered as, you know, the best path. But again, it depends on our temperament. And what I believe that all three go together. Like say, if I serve the Lord, and what happens when I'm serving him, I develop love for him. Oh, he's so beautiful, he's so powerful. And then as I develop love, I want to know who is this God that I'm serving. Or if I love God, then I want to know about him. I want to serve him. Or if I come to know who is this almighty God, he has done so much, then I automatically develop love and service. So all three paths go together, but predominantly, depending on my nature, I may choose one, the second, or the other. And then the question came, is God form or formless? So the question is, are you form or formless? If you say, I am this body, in fact, when God appeared in the form of Ram on earth, he asked one of his devotees, Hanumanji, he says, are you, what is my relationship to you? He says, Lord, when I think of myself as this body, then I am your servant. As a body, I serve the Lord because he is also of the form. You can think he's the form of Jesus or Buddha or Shiva or Krishna or Ram or Mother Goddess. So as a body, I am a servant. But when I say I am the mind and intellect, I say I am this intelligent human being. I don't think of myself as this body. Then I am a part of the total mind. There is an individual mind and there is intellect and there is a total mind. So I am a part of him. So as a body, I am a servant. As a mind and intellect, I am part of him. But when I think of myself as Om or consciousness or Brahman, then there is only one. There is only one consciousness which is all pervading. Then I am him, one with him. Then there is no difference, no separation. So similarly, if God is form or formless, depends on whether I am form or formless. If I have a form, if I have a shape, then I worship God also as a form, as Jesus on the cross, or as Mother Mary, or as Buddha or Krishna. But if I say I am formless, the moment I say I am formless, then what happens? Then I am not this form. Then I become infinite. The only way you can become formless is if you keep extending, extending. Because the moment it ends somewhere, then it becomes that form. Say if I'm formless, but I extend from this room to the end of Bakersfield. But that is still a form because I'm limiting myself. Okay, I'm from here till the northeast of Bakersfield. No, that is when I say I am formless, then automatically I am infinite. Because only thing that can be formless is that is infinite. So when I think of myself the form, then I worship God as a form. When I think of myself as formless, then I become all-pervading. So then in the verse number 7, it says, how should we remember the Lord? And it's a short verse. There is not much commentary. Ajya dharaya srotasa samam.
Ajya dharaya srotasa samam.
సరళ చింతనం విరళత పరం సో ఆజ్యధారయ మీన్స్ ఆజ్య ఇస్ ఘీ ఘీ ఇస్ క్లారిఫైడ్ బటర్ విచ్ ఇస్ మెల్టెడ్ యునో విచ్ ఇస్ క్లారిఫైడ్ ఆర్ యూ కెన్ సే ఆయిల్ సో వెన్ ఆజ్యధారయ మీన్స్ లైక్ అ స్ట్రీమ్ ఆఫ్ ఆయిల్ సో లైక్ వెన్ యు ఆర్ పోరింగ్ ఆయిల్ ఫ్రమ్ వన్ వెసల్ టు అనదర్ ఆర్ వెన్ యు ఆర్ పోరింగ్ ఆయిల్ ఇన్ టు యువర్ కార్ యునో యువర్ కార్ ఇస్ లో ఇన్ ఆయిల్ సో వెన్ యు ఆర్ పోరింగ్ ఆయిల్ Is it broken or is it continuous? It's not that the oil breaks, you know, little bit falls, little bit. No, it goes in a continuous stream and it is effortless. When it is being poured, no effort is required. And it is a continuous stream of oil. Oil doesn't break several times in the middle and a little bit falls. No, it goes continuous. Aja dharaya or srota sasamam or like a river. When a river is flowing, does she flow? Is it broken? Now stream may, you know, stream goes side to side, it might stop or break. But a river which is huge like the Mississippi River or the Kern River flows in a continuous stream, unbroken. It goes on, it's been like the Kern River has been running for millions and billions of years ever since Earth started, or the Mississippi River or the Ganges or the Nile River has been running. We don't know since when, since time immemorial. So continuous, and why? Because they are fed from the snow. So just as a river's flow is continuous or the pouring of oil or clarified butter is continuous, so similarly our contemplation should be continuous. Sarala chintanam viralata param. Sarala means continuous is better than virala which is broken. So what do we mean by continuous contemplation or broken contemplation? First of all, as we said, having done enough service and love, then you are ready for knowledge. And in the knowledge, you are contemplating upon the essential nature of the Lord. Like we have talked about, it's here also, I have covered in this verse, but we can address it here, like the name, form, or essential nature. Now, when I think of God, I first think of, say, Jesus or Krishna or Buddha. I think of the form. So there is a name, Krishna or Jesus. And then there is a form. But the name and the form can be different. If you are a Hindu, you worship Krishna. If you are a Muslim, you know, Muslims don't worship form. But if you are a Buddhist, you worship the form of Buddha. If you are a Christian, you worship but the form of Jesus or Mother Mary. But the essential nature of them all is one. There is one that they call as Father in heaven, that Jesus calls as Father in heaven, or Hindus call as Brahman or consciousness. So the essential nature of all forms, like we have all forms here on the board, on the walls, we say that God is one but takes different forms. And so he expresses at different forms. Why? Because it is very hard for me to think of God as a formless. If I sit and think of God as a particular form, I love God and I think of, okay, that is easy for me. I think of Jesus or Krishna or Shiva. It becomes, but then if I think of him as formless, all pervading, it's very difficult. So they say as your mind becomes more and more subtle, in the beginning our mind is very gross because we are identified with the body, mind and intellect. And so it is easier to remember him as a form. But as your mind becomes more subtle, through more practice of meditation, through practice of contemplation, through doing service and love of God, as your mind slowly becomes purer, your vasanas are reduced, then that subtle mind is easier able to contemplate upon the Lord. But what happens is we sit for contemplation or meditation, and our mind wanders, and happens to all of us. You know, you sit like you're thinking of Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost, and then Son, you say, you know, my wife's son, stepson, he's so bad. She spoils him. She spoils him. She gives him too much money. He comes home late at night. I don't know whether he's drinking or whether he's on drugs. You were thinking about Jesus and now your mind is thinking about the Son, and before you know, half an hour is gone because you're worried about all his problems and what is he doing and why maybe he's drinking and how I can control him, but I can't control him because his mother's... So your half an hour of meditation is gone in thinking about the Son. Or similarly, you know, in Hindus, you like we say you're doing Ram, 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 and then you say, you know, Ram Prasad, my neighbor, you know, last year he had borrowed $50 and he has not yet returned. So before you know it, your mind runs. So what they say is that initially your mind will run, and it will run to an object because you're so attached to your family or your work. So the mind runs to the work, or, you know, I have to go to work today. What am I going to? So you bring it back. That's why in the Gita, in the sixth chapter, he says, as the mind runs, you bring it back. As the mind runs, you bring it back. And by chanting the mantra or by observing the breath, you bring the mind back and quiet. And then with practice, then it becomes continuous, like the flow of oil or like the flow of a river. The mind is continuously contemplating upon the nature of the self. And so with practice, it happens. And you will find also, as you have been meditating for a while, initially, it was very hard to control the mind. But as you practice, at least for 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 1 minute, it stays, you know, still. And then you enjoy the meditation. When your mind is still and your mind is quiet and it's very peaceful, then meditation becomes a joyful activity. So as you practice slowly, slowly, then, of course, these great rishis, they go into contemplation, and they say some of them could stay for months or even years, you know, without moving, you know. So, I mean, that, of course, is a state that's hard for us, you and me, to reach. But at least I can do for a few minutes and then slowly extend that. But they say you have to be quiet, alert, and vigilant. So the mind first, that's Swami Chinmayananda Gurudev used to say, first of all, the mind has to be made quiet. So by observing the breath or by chanting the mantra, you make the mind quiet. And then you are very, very alert. The mind should not shift. The more vigilant. The moment the mind shifts to something else, you say, no, this is not the time to think of work or family or money or children. This is my time with God. This is my exclusive. So you bring the mind back. And as you become more alert and vigilant, you don't let the mind slip. Or even if it slips, you very quickly bring it back. So that's why they say continuous is better than broken. That does not mean that if my mind is breaking, not staying, so I should give up. You know, oh, I can't. No. As your mind becomes more and more subtle, as you practice more, and as you detach, because right now we are so excessively attached to our things and possessions and people, our mind is all the time thinking. So spend time in thinking about the Lord and turn the attention inward. And so that is superior. So the subtler the mind, the easier it is to focus on the Lord. Any questions or comments about this particular verse or what we have talked about so far?
Could it be that continuity of thought in contemplation over God can happen more easily to people who are more naturally calm?
Yes.
As opposed to people like that?
True. It is true. People, there are some people who are naturally more calm. Like between my wife and I, she's so much calmer. For her, it is very easy to sit. But for me, because I'm so active and work so much, also, it depends on what you have done throughout the day. See, if you have worked too much, like I have a full practice, so I'm working all day and I'm busy, and then I come at the evening here and try to quieten my mind, or I sit in the morning for meditation, it is more difficult. So that's why they recommend that reduce unnecessary activity during the day. You know, do things that are essential, but unnecessarily talking to people, unnecessarily just moving around, doing excessive activity, surfing the net, watching TV. Rather than that, you know, sit and chant the name of the Lord, read some good books. So as you reduce your mind's activity, it becomes easier for the mind to stay still. So you reduce your physical activities as much as you can to avoid unnecessary, and reduce your mental activities. Instead of just surfing the net, going on the internet, picking up the phone and calling people, or like, you know, Friday, Saturday, people go to parties and then they're home, don't come home till midnight, 1 o'clock. And then you wake up at 6 and try to meditate. What will happen? You'll be remembering all the scenes of the party. Who said this? Who said? So, but if you have gone to bed at 9, 10 o'clock, you've had a good night's sleep, and your mind is rested, then it is so. Yes, people, there are some people who are more active, some people who are more quiet, but even activity through practice can be reduced. As I reduce my physical and mental activity and practice, and we have given the meditation step, so you go stepwise. You know, first you sit erect with your eyes closed, relax the body from head to toe, observe the breath, chant the mantra. So as you follow all the steps, you will find that it becomes easier to quieten the mind. So if you systematically, and then through practice and through detachment, that's what he says in the sixth chapter, abhyase na tu kaunteya vairage na cha grihyate. So through practice and through detachment, you can. Why the mind is running? Because it is attached to things. So you slowly detach. I don't need to think about it at this time. And so, you know, by practice. But you're right. Different people have different. That's why we say for such a person, the path of service may be better. If your mind is so much extrovert that you cannot sit and meditate, then go out and, you know, build a house or feed the homeless or maybe go to the kitchen and cook, you know, things like that.
But there are certain laws like these restrictions that you just talked about. Right. That's not productive at
yes,
all.
Right. Like watching the late night news, you know, things that stimulate the mind. You know, violent things, you know, read the right kind of literature, watch the right kind of TV, put the right kind of thoughts in your mind. Because there are certain thoughts that are very disruptive to the mind and certain thoughts are calming. So if you can read more spiritual literature in your car instead of listening to some guy talking, you know, violence or nonsense, you know, listen to some soft music, you know, classical music or spiritual music. So you can practice throughout the day to reduce the activity of the mind. Yes.
And hanging out with the right people.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Absolutely. Satsang. Yeah. The company of the right people. Yeah. That's very important. You know, groups like these where you know you get to think about. So yeah.
Also, I realize that when I am in a community gathering like this, then your quality of meditation is tenfold better.
Yes. True. The group meditation is always better than the individual. Group meditation is always better when you meditate in a group. And then that same thing you can carry with you and then practice at home also to get that at the same state. Yeah, no. Some amount of physical activity you have to do. Like you need to go for a walk. You need to do something. You can't be sitting all day. But what I meant was overactively, you know, unnecessarily taking on more work than I can handle, you know, increasing my work. Like in my practice, I might start doing, you know, extra work, going to the hospital, going to another town to get more patients. Or in a business, you know, your business is doing well, but then you say, no, I want to start a second business in, you know, San Luis Obispo, a third one. So expanding your work where you can't handle it, that's what I meant. Or unnecessarily just, you know, going to parties, staying out late at night, calling friends, you know, just talking. But activity is good. We're not saying that you shouldn't go for a walk or, no, that's good. At your age, definitely, you know, that's physical activities. Going to the gym is good, you know. But what I meant was overactive, overexertion. Yeah, no, if you can go for an hour to the gym, that's very good. And even when you're in the gym, focus attention on who is the one that is propelling my muscle as I'm lifting this weight? What is it that's causing me to lift the weight? So turn attention to the self. So then that also becomes meditation.
Visualize your activity too.
Right. Like when I'm walking on the treadmill, I try to pay attention to who is. Then I say I am watching the walker. When I walk on the treadmill, I say I'm observing the walker. So I am not walking on the treadmill, but I am watching the one who is walking. So then you can make that also a meditative act. Something which does not require any intelligence, you know, just walking on the treadmill doesn't need any brains. So you can do that. You can't do that while driving, but you can do that. Or while doing brain surgery, you can't do it then.
But I think you can sanctify your work too. For example, if a lot of work that I do is around water treatment. So if I do my work and a lot of work that I positive energy flows into your world.
Yes, and by purifying that water, I'm doing a service to the Lord,
right,
to the
community.
There are
two ways of looking at it. Either you look at it that way, or you look at it that if I do this work, then I will become the next team leader or manager. It depends on how perceive your work.
True.
If there is a sense of purity in it, then even if you do some extra work, it will still be refreshing.
Yes, exactly. You will still get the promotion if you have done a good job, but your goal is not to get the promotion. Your goal is to do the job to the best of your ability as a service to the Lord and the service to the community. Because by giving pure water to everybody, I am serving the Lord who is there in all of them. That's what we have said. No, Lord is, all these forms are nothing but the Lord himself. Yes. Yeah, so the work can become worship too. Absolutely. Same thing, a doctor when he's operating on a patient, or even a receptionist, secretary sitting at a desk, everybody who comes is the Lord himself coming. Then she automatically will become, you know, friendly and smile. Otherwise, again, one more customer. You know, then it, the same attitude can change.
Like the treadmill example.
Yeah, right. Yeah. The next verse is contemplation with duality. Is God separate from me? Or is he one with me? It is similar to what we have done in this one. I think we can finish it. Verse number 8. Bheva bhavana sohamityasau. Bhavana bhida pavani mata. So Bheda Bhavanat. Bheda Bhavanat means duality. That God and I are separate. That is worshipping God with duality. Sa aham iti asau. Sa aham. Soham. You know, like Shiva always uses soham. He is me. He means can be he, she, it, but that consciousness is me. I am not separate. So am I separate or am I one? So he says, Bhavana abhida pavani mata. So this idea that he and I are one is superior to bhavana abhida, that he and I are separate. And the one that thinks that God and I are one is a pavani mata, is a thought that is purified. It purifies your mind. So how can he and I be the same? See, we always think that I am this useless, finite, you know, creature. I am good for nothing. I'm an ordinary human being. And he is omniscient. He is all-knowing. He's omnipotent. He can do anything. God created this whole universe. And he created all the planets and the heavens and the stars. And he's all-knowing. And he's omnipresent. He's everywhere. God is omniscient, all-knowing, omnipotent, all-powerful, and omnipresent everywhere. And who am I? I'm just, you know, this 5'6" individual. I'm a limited individual. I'm here in Bakersfield. How can he and I be the same? So you initially start by contemplating upon God. Okay, God is this almighty creature. Oh God, let me invoke your grace and blessings. You know, like we say, may thy grace and blessings flow through us to the world around us. So we invoke the Lord's grace as... And then the question is whether is God is with or without attributes. Does God have attributes or not? So attributes means, does he have form or not? And we already talked about, if you think he has a form, then I also have a form. But if you say he is formless, he's all pervading, he has no particular shape, no particular form, then when he is everywhere, all pervading, then how can I be separate? When God is everywhere, he's in the wall, he's in the space, he's in the chair, he's in the glass, he's in the book, he's in the pointer, he's in me too. Then I and he are not separate. So this is a higher way of thinking. So like the example they give is the wave and the ocean. Now the wave arises from the ocean and it just comes for a few seconds and disappears. And so the wave thinks, I am this small little wave, you know, I only live for a few seconds. Then this wave is bigger than me. This wave is smaller than me. But who is my creator? The almighty ocean. So the ocean is big and powerful. And from him I emerged, this little wave. and then I live for a while and go. So similarly, we think there is this almighty God who created me. And so I live for a short while, maybe 60, 70, 80, 90 years. And then I go. Well, God has been living for billions, millions of years. He's before time. So he is like the ocean and I am like the little wave. And the wave, of course, then will think, I am useless. You know, I am not good for nothing because I am just a tiny little wave. What can I do? I only come for a little while and then I die. But then if the wave thinks I am water, wave doesn't think I am a wave. He thinks I am water. Now, water never dies, right? Water never dies. The wave may arise and die, but the water is ever there. And the water is there in the wave and in the ocean. There is only one water. There is only one water in the wave, only one water in the ocean. And the water may take a form of a wave, but nothing happens to the water. So if the wave thinks I am water, then he says me and the ocean are one. There is only one water and we are all one. So similarly, as we had said, if I think I am the body, then I am an ordinary individual mind and intellect. But if I think I am that consciousness, which is really I am, all of us are that consciousness at this moment occupying this body, mind and intellect. So the moment I think that I am the water, I am that consciousness, then the individual I disappears. The ego, see, the ego that thinks I am this useless creature, temporary, weak, appearing and disappearing, I'm suffering, oh, I'm going through all these physical ailments, I'm going through so much stress, and, people are giving me stress. Why? Because I'm identified with the body, mind, and intellect. When I say I am the consciousness, then the sickness is to the body, it's not to me. The stress is to the mind and intellect, it is not to me. So such an individual goes beyond sickness, goes beyond stress, so that I, the ego that is suffering, disappears. And that is why meditation helps in taking care of stress, even overcoming physical ailments. Because in that silence of the meditation, the meditator disappears, the ego disappears. And the more I identify with the self, the more then they say such a person becomes immortal. He never dies, which is true. There are two reasons he never dies. One is people who have become one with God, they don't die like Jesus. He will never die. Even 10,000 years from now, people will be remembering Jesus, will be remembering Buddha, will be remembering Swami Chinmayananda, wherever there is a Chinmaya Mission. So these great saints, once they become one with the truth, they become immortal. Secondly, they realize that I am that immortal consciousness. My body may perish, my mind and intellect will disappear when I die, but I as the consciousness will always remain. So that's what they're saying, that focus on my essential nature and God's essential nature, because God's essential nature is Om and my essential nature is Om. So we in our essential nature. So they say there is a higher nature and a lower nature. Or you can call it higher and lower, or essential and non-essential. So the lower nature is body, mind and intellect. The higher nature is Om. The non-essential is this body, mind and intellect, which is what I think. But my essential higher nature is that. So once you stay with that idea that I am that attributeless self, then you say there is only one. And then that individual, so he, when you say he is me, then me disappears and he alone remains. He or she or it. So God alone remains. Because when that ego, when that I disappears, then you don't say he is me. Then I no longer exist. It does not mean that I die. What it means is that my individual ego disappears. Then such a person, having realized the truth, becomes an instrument for service. Then he becomes a prophet, he becomes Jesus or Buddha or Swami Chinmayananda or Shankaracharya. So he becomes an agent of the Lord, he becomes an instrument of the Lord. He works because then he has no ego, he has no separateness. You know, like Saint Francis or Mother Teresa or any of these great saints, when they were working in the world, they did not work as an individual, but they worked for the total consciousness. They worked for all. And the example they give is like in sleep. Like when I want to sleep, you say, I want to sleep, I want to sleep. As long as you are saying, I want to sleep, want to sleep, want, you will never sleep, right? So you say, okay, you turn off the light, you have listened, read some good books, now you turn off the light and you are tired, and then you relax your body, and then slowly your mind becomes quiet, and then the mind disappears into sleep. As long as you're thinking, I can't sleep, you will never sleep, or I want to sleep. But when that wanting to or ability to sleep disappears, when that I disappears, then the mind merges into sleep and you disappear into sleep, right? Then no longer that I is no longer there. When you're in deep sleep, are you there? No. You could be sleeping on the rocks or you could be sleeping on a bed. You don't know, you know, where you are, what you are doing. You have no idea in deep sleep. So similarly, the mind merges into that consciousness, when in the depth of your meditation, when the mind, first you say, I am meditating, I am meditating, I am meditating, I am meditating, I, you know, that I is there. But then slowly that I disappears, the meditator is gone, and then the meditated alone remains. What I am meditating on, that alone remains, and I disappear. So it's basically the same thing, you know, it is an extension of the same verse. So what he's saying is that as you quieten your mind, slowly the mind disappears and the meditator does not mean the meditator dies, but his mind is so still that he becomes one with that silence. And you must have experienced that sometimes in meditation when your mind is really, really quiet. You feel that. You feel the quietude and the peace and the oneness. So that is a stepwise. That's why he says, initially, you start by saying he is separate from me. God is separate. He is all powerful. Ultimately, you come to that. He is one. Again, I said, as you identify with the body, the mind and intellect or the consciousness. So it's the same idea, but here he is saying that better is to think of him as everything. When he is everything, then he is also me. And how can I be separate? When everything is God, then I am that too. Does not mean that I am God or I can create the world, but that I, the individual, doesn't exist. I disappears. That's very important. It's not a grammatical error. It's not I disappear. It's the I, ego, disappears. You know, people might say, oh, you're wrong English. No, I purposely put that S there for people to think. It's not I disappear. Then when I say I disappear, then I am still there. But the I, the ego, disappears. That's the idea. Any questions?
Saguna and Nirguna.
Yes. Yes, Saguna is the form. Saguna is God with form. So when I think of God as Krishna or Ram or Buddha or Shiva or Mother Goddess, then I'm thinking of God as a form. And when it has form, then it has attributes. Like when I think of Krishna, what are his attributes? You know, he's dark color, he's wearing a yellow cloth, he's playing the flute. Or when I think of Ram, you know, he was so, you know, good, such an ideal individual. Or when I think of Jesus, then I think of his attributes. He was calm, compassionate, loving. So Saguna means God with attributes, with qualities, with form and with qualities. So form is the form of Jesus or Krishna or Ram or Mother Goddess. So that is the form. And then what are the qualities? Like Mother Saraswati, she is goddess of knowledge. Mother Lakshmi is goddess of wealth. So one is the form and one are her qualities or attributes. That is called Saguna. Nirguna means the formless, attributeless. All of them, whether it's Jesus or Ram or Krishna or Saraswati or Lakshmi, they are manifestation of that formless. Nirguna Brahman, the formless, attributeless Brahman called Nirguna, manifests as Sagun. That one total consciousness, which is called as Father in Heaven or Brahman or that totality, takes different forms to bless us. And it is easier for us to love Sagun Brahma rather than Nirguna Brahma. But as your mind becomes more subtle and as you progress in meditation, you say that, yes, I love God with a form, but that form represents the formless. That's why Krishna says, I am the substratum of the whole universe. When Krishna says that in me the whole universe arises, it's not Krishna that the one who was living in Vrindavan. When he says I, then he identifies himself with the total consciousness. And in that total consciousness, this universe arises. So that understanding, so Sagun is the form and Nirgun is the formless. Formless without qualities, without attributes. Like Brahman has no form, has no qualities, has no attributes. There, you cannot describe him, you cannot identify him. He has no color, no shape, nothing, because it is the substratum, it is the formless. But that formless takes a particular form of Krishna or Ram or Jesus or Mother Goddess or all those. So that is the relationship between Nirgun and Sagun.
Yeah, we used Saguna Brahma, Nirguna Brahma.
Nirguna Brahma, yeah. So Sagun Brahma is Krishna or Ram and Nirgun Brahma is the formless. Right. That is, it was a good question. No, thank you, it's a good question. Yeah.
In that sense, I guess that even the dual approach doesn't harm you.
It doesn't harm. It's very good. You know, remembering the Lord and invoking His grace is very good. It's very beneficial because you invoke His grace, you invoke His blessings. He's my Almighty Father or Mother in heaven or Father. He protects me. He gave birth to me. He will take care of me. So you have a develop a relationship with God. That's what we say. As a father and mother or as a friend or as a beloved, or as a protector, or as a creator. So those are all very good, you know, and you start with that, that I love God, and God is my protector, God is my benefactor. Yeah, we are not, it doesn't have to be helpless. It can be a positive, like it's very, very true. But then ultimately, as long as you and God are separate, you will consider yourself to be this limited, temporary individual. And then when sorrows come, when problems come, then you will say, oh, God is not protecting me now. I am suffering. I am in pain. I am suffering. I am being insulted. I lost my job. I lost my money. And then you will become miserable. So what happens is that at that point, if you say that I am this consciousness, and at this moment I am occupying this body, mind, and intellect, and the nature of the body is it will get old. Body will get old. I will get arthritis. I will get back pain. I will get, my body will become weaker. I won't be able to walk. My mind, I will have sometimes joy and sorrow. Somebody will praise me. Somebody will insult me. So in the world, as long as you think you are this limited creature, you will suffer. Happiness will not be forever because either physically or mentally or intellectually, people will be, the world will give you blows. The world is not always kind because there are world has all variety of people. Some are good, some are bad. And also the situations might change. You know, today I have a good job, tomorrow I may not have a job. Today I have good health, tomorrow I may not have good health. So, but a person who can identify with the total consciousness and say, I am that consciousness, then even if the body and mental stresses come, he's able to. That's why when you worship Shiva, they say, what is one phrase? Amritena aaplutam shantam divya bhoga samanvitam. So he says, Lord is immortal and peaceful. Right? Lord is immortal and peaceful. But when I say, I am also immortal and peaceful, then I am immortal and peaceful. Yes, this body will have its problems. And if I go through surgery, I'm in pain. You say, but I am immortal and peaceful. This body is hurting. Yeah, go and take Tylenol or go see the doctor. But I am not hurting because I am immortal and peaceful. So that if you just put those two things, and I try to imbibe in myself. I keep repeating to myself, I am immortal, I am peaceful, and I am detached. I am not attached to any of these. The moment you get that clear, then no matter what sorrows the world gives you, the world cannot touch you. The world can give sorrows to your body, to your mind, to your intellect, but cannot touch you because you say, I am immortal and I am peaceful. So just put these two words. I am immortal, peaceful, and I am detached. And I every morning I meditate on that. I do this Shiva because I am a Shiva Bhakta. So I do this Laghu Nyasa, the Shiva Stotram. And part of that it says that the Lord is immortal and peaceful. But I say, I am that. And then there is a second line which says, Shivoham, Shivoham. I am Shiva. I am not separate from Shiva. Because if Shiva is everywhere, he is everything, then I am part of him. I am not separate. So when if he is immortal and peaceful and detached, so am I. And just repeat to yourself, I am immortal, I am peaceful, I am detached. I am immortal, I am peaceful, I am detached. Just keep repeating and you will find that your mind becomes so good. And then no matter, you know, it says in the Gita, yasmin sthitona dukhena gurunapi vichalyate. He says a person who is settled in this knowledge, even the greatest sorrow in the world cannot affect him or her. The world may have all the sorrows, but I am not affected. It does not mean that he becomes like a stone or like a rock. He doesn't care. No, that's joys and sorrows will come. But such a person is more sympathetic to others' joys and sorrows. But his own joys and sorrows, he's able to tolerate better. It's not that he's not going to feel pain when he had surgery. But his ability to tolerate will improve.
The other thing I have found which is more concerning to me with the wave ocean analogy is that sometimes it leads to people identifying with the ocean in their own little pocket in one part of the world, in one country, which is harder, I think, to develop. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is harder, and it starts by dual, but then extends to non-dual, and then you should develop oneness with all, not only people of my religion or my church, but all religions, all churches, because they are all waves in that one ocean. And ultimately, they are all water. See, like yesterday in the study group, we were discussing that when a kind and sweet person comes, it is very easy to say God is in him. Or when you go with nature, you sit in Hart Park and you see the river and the trees, it's very easy to see God. But when you're dealing with a rapist or a child molester, you know, or some, you know, horrible person like that who has molested multiple children and raped multiple women. And there was a psychiatrist who deals with such people. She has to verify that whether he's free to be released. And this, even though they have, you know, mutilated and killed so many women and children and all that. But when they come there, they say, I have changed. I am now a good person. And they want to be released from prison. And there to see the God in them also is very difficult. And somebody has committed such horrible deeds. And then you say the same God that is in me is in, which is actually true. There is only one God who is in all of them. Even the rapist, to rape a woman or to molest a child, he has to have energy provided by God. God is the one that is giving him energy to rape or to molest the child. But what he's doing is he's misusing the energy because of his vasanas to use the same energy for a bad purpose. So that's what they say, hate the sin, not the sinner. The God is in there in everyone, but based on his vasanas, on his tendencies, he's committing good or bad acts. So the person needs to be punished. We're not saying that just because God is in him, you release him. No, if he has 10 years or 20 years of jail, he deserves to be punished because of the acts. But you don't hate the person because you see that oneness. So it's more difficult to see it in criminals, that God is in them too.
Sometimes you can get overwhelmed. So they may ask you to change your faith and become like them. But if you just look at the way they approach you and how soft they are, you can see that they have developed a kindness in their hearts.
Yeah, no. To worship God in any form is good. Whether you worship him as duality or as non-dual, sagun or nirgun, they are both good. But what he's saying is when you remove the separateness, when you become one with him, then you develop all the divine qualities. Then they come automatically. You don't have to struggle. When you say he and I are one, then your I disappears, then the ego disappears.
Then you're in the flow.
Flow of that. Then you are one with that. So that's why he says it is more purer. It is a pavani mata. It is a purifier. The separateness. If you worship God, that's good. We're not saying that one shouldn't worship God as a separate. That's fine. That's why a lot of them worship sagun. They say, you know, even in the gopis, when his friend tried to teach them, you know, you should not worship Krishna. You should worship the formless entity. So they say, who is this formless? Where does he live? That's what he says. Where does your nirgun brahm, where does he live? We don't see him. But Krishna, we could see because he was living with us. He was, you know, taking the cows and he was playing his flute. So they only wanted to love sagun because they couldn't see the formless. And they were fine with that, you know. So we're not saying that it is in it is bad. All we are saying is that it is more purifying. Yes.
That so their path will start with some duality.
Yes.
But
yes.
Really the ultimate truth is the oneness. That's all there is.
Right, right, right. When very few people reach that, the saints or it's very rare. Well, that's why to one who can reach that is very rare.
Yes.
It's not that common, you know, and that's why the path of that's why not too many people come here, because this knowledge is not that easy to grasp.
Way of saying that.
Yes.
Even if we are not in that 10%, if we appreciate it, then there is greater acceptance, even in our existing
right.
current state of dual existence. I think we will accept everybody.
Right.
In that flow.
Right, and when you accept everybody, then slowly you are reaching that the oneness.
Well, yeah, you accept
when you accept
where they are.
Right, when
they are, but there is, but the ultimate truth really is everything's one.
Right, but if you say mine is superior to them,
right.
then
right.
you are still in that.
Exactly.
But when you say all paths lead to that one, they are all one. Then the more you accept, the more your thinking becomes purer.
Yeah.